Isn't this a sports show?
Micah says this is a template on how to lose your show before Alex loses his job.
Almost entirely.
I'm pretty sure there's always going to be somebody we're better than and somebody we're worse than.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Durf, durf, durf.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
I have three greatest detriments. Number one, I have a bad memory. Number two, I'm easily distracted. And number three, I'm not good at radio.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
Also, he's not that likable. I was going to say that next, actually. I was going to say, also, I'm not very likable.
You have a squeaky voice for radio.
Right, I do. I have a bad radio voice.
Girly laugh.
I definitely have a very girly laugh.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome in on a Red Friday. There's a Chiefs game again this week. That's a nice little change of pace from these last couple.
I'm wearing blue.
Yeah, Beard is in blue. I'm wearing black.
But our blood is red.
I was just going to say, you know what? I bleed red. I bleed red.
And that actually fits in with something we'll talk about later.
Does it?
Yeah. Our test that we took.
Well, it's not, it wasn't a blood test.
I know. Whatever.
We'll tease this right now. Later on, Beards and I are going to share with you the results of the which murderous villain are you test.
See? Blood. There you go.
And this isn't like, this isn't fictional villains, real historical villains. We'll talk about that later. First and foremost, though, something I cannot believe is not a bigger story right now. Some breaking news out of Chiefs practice earlier today. I got here, I was listening to Andy Reid talk to the media, and I heard something from Coach Andy Reid here that I just, we have cold hard evidence that Andy Reid is openly, cavalierly, casually, as if not even having to give it a second thought, lying straight to the faces of the media. Wake up, sheeple. Listen to this.
Again, we look forward to the challenge of playing the Giants. We know they're a good football team. We've had a chance to see their schemes, study their schemes. Guys have had a good week of practice and are getting ready to go up and play against a good team.
Preposterous. Andy Reid is lying to the face of the public. The media is supposed to receive information and then share that information with the public at large. I can't believe, first of all, I can't believe anyone would publish that without the proper context of Andy Reid clearly lying.
We know they're a good football team.
No, that is a bold-faced lie.
We know they're a good football team.
The Giants now, are, I think, have the second overall draft pick if the draft was going to be today.
We know they're a good football team.
No, Coach. Coach Reid, listen. You know I'll stand up for you whenever I can. You know that I'm glad you're the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, but over my cold, dead corpse will I let you lie to the good fans of this Chiefs kingdom like this?
We know they're a good football team. We
play the next part, Beards. Play the part that comes directly after that Andy Reid said.
We know they're a good football team. We've had a chance to see their schemes, study their schemes. Guys have had a good week of practice and are getting ready to go up and play against a good team.
We've had a chance to see their schemes. Oh, Andy Reid, if only you had a chance to see their schemes.
Is he, though, doing reverse psychology where he's trying to make the Giants think they actually are a good football team?
No, Andy
Reid. Then when they come out and they just smash them up and down the field and just completely waylace the entire Giants, and they're just like, oh, we're actually not that good. And it just bullies them into submission just because Andy Reid said they're a good football team.
That was a perfect impression. Holy cow.
Thank you.
But see, I would give Andy that benefit of the doubt, except for the Giants are very aware of what they are. They won a football game this year once. Since that win, they have lost to the Seahawks at home 24-7. Then they lost at home to the Rams 51-17. Then they lost at the Niners.
Off game.
By 10 points. They got caught looking ahead to this one.
Off game. They're not worried.
You know what? I got to find the NFL point differential for this year. the Giants are probably dead last, or very close to it at least. Are you, I mean, listen, I know what Andy Reid is doing. I get it. I'll give you a quick window into the bit. Yeah, I understand. He says that about every team all the time. But I won't have it. I will not have the leader of a franchise lying to the public at large, spewing false facts, fake news.
We know they're a good football team. We
just a lie. Just a bold-faced lie. Here we go. The point differential throughout the league. The Chiefs, just for kicks, are plus 45. They're the only team in the AFC West with a positive point differential. The Jags are the only team in the AFC South with a positive point differential. The Patriots, the only team in the AFC East with a positive point differential. That's interesting. The Ravens and the Steelers both have positive differentials in the AFC North. All right, I got some good news here. The San Francisco 49ers have a minus 86 point differential. The Denver Broncos, minus 73. The Miami Dolphins, minus 87. The New York Giants, minus 88. So they have been outscored this year by 88 points. That is, however, at least better than the Browns and the Colts. The Colts have been outscored by 101 points this year. That is unbelievable.
Isn't that what the Phoenix Suns got outscored by last night?
That is exactly right.
At halftime?
Yes. The Eagles, Saints, and Rams are all over 100 on the positive side. That's interesting. And the Rams have a positive 134-point differential. That's unbelievable. I want the Rams and the Colts to play. Did they? They played in week one. It was 46-9. That feels right. In fact, that game pretty much made those facts that I just read happen. That's stupendous. Listen, guys, before the season, I think I had the Chiefs losing this game. And, like, Matt Verderam was on Twitter, obviously he was on the show with us yesterday. He said on Twitter yesterday, said that he has this, or maybe this morning even, he just sort of has this sick feeling in his gut that maybe the Chiefs blow this game on Sunday. Mark this, Beards. Save this for posterity. One way or another, this is going to have to be a part of the beginning of the show on Monday. I say, on the record, if the Chiefs lose to the Giants on Sunday, I'm going to call Elon Musk, head of Tesla, and ask him to personally build me a rocket ship that he can use to launch me directly into the sun. Thank you, Beards. If the Chiefs lose, I mean, I know I did this with the Steelers game and ended up looking very foolish. Go ahead, Beards. You had something to add?
Oh, no. I'll let you finish that and then I'll say my thing.
If the Chiefs lose to the Giants, I will come in here on Monday. I don't even care why. It doesn't matter why they would lose. If the Chiefs lose to the Giants, I'll come in here on Monday and tell you that Patrick Mahomes should start, Bob Sutton should be fired, and Clark Hunt should be ashamed of himself.
Now, what happens if they lose to the Jets?
They're going to have to find somebody else to host this show. The Jets are a better team than the Giants are. The Giants just lost to one. The Giants are, at this point, are the second worst team in football. It's the Browns, then it's the Giants. And then you got your Niners and stuff. But the Niners just beat the Giants head-to-head.
I know, though, that you absolutely have complete disdain for the Jets.
I do.
So that is why I asked that question.
I do. Well, yeah, if the Chiefs lose to the Jets, that you're going to have to find another host for the show because I will be inconsolable. And the rest of the season, by the way, the Giants have at Washington, at Oakland, versus the Cowboys, versus the Eagles, at Arizona, versus Washington. They will probably go 1-15, defeating only the Denver Broncos in Denver back in week 6 or 7. And they don't do anything well either, by the way. They cannot. The Chiefs cannot lose to the Giants. And now, with that being said, I'm going to have an attitude similar to that for a good chunk of games from the rest of this season. We did this before the season. We've done it since several different times. I know we're doing it consistently. But like with the Steelers game and at the Raiders and then at the Cowboys, those were all very much losable games. Losing to the... I don't want to be revisionist. Losing at home to the Steelers was devastating and the game itself was terribly played. The offense was a disaster, and it's incredibly harmful to have lost that game. But those were all games with reasonable losses following them. At the Giants versus Nathan Peterman at home, at Josh McCown or like Christian Hackenberg, because I think Josh McCown's hurt right now, versus the Raiders at home, versus the Chargers, versus the Dolphins at home, at the Broncos. I could build you a narrative in which they lose in Denver. I could build you a narrative for how they lose at the Jets versus the Raiders versus the Chargers, frankly. But losing versus the Bills or at the Jets or versus the Dolphins at home would be just horrifying. And I was going to say inexcusable, but I don't really know what that means, because I'm not saying that if they lose to those teams, then Andy Reid should be fired, because he shouldn't. That's not, obviously, that's not what I'm saying. But it would be inexcusable if you are in a place where you want to contend that the Chiefs are a contender. If you're of the mindset that the Chiefs really can win a Super Bowl, you've got to beat those teams. And frankly, like, I'm going to have this a very similar attitude with the Jags or the Ravens in the playoffs or the Titans if the Chiefs end up with any of those teams. I think the Chiefs are in a tier by themselves where they are clearly not to be favored against the Patriots or the Steelers. They clearly are to be favored against everyone else in the AFC. Neutral site, on the road, at home, doesn't matter. And in both directions. Steelers at home, Patriots at home, they should be favored. Steelers at Arrowhead, Patriots at Arrowhead, they should be favored. Patriots less so than the Steelers at this point, frankly. Everybody else in Jacksonville, in Kansas City, in Mexico City, in London, does not matter to me. And frankly, this I was a little bit more hesitant on the Chiefs in the preseason than I should have been in a couple of areas. And really, it might have also largely me being higher on the Raiders than I should have been. Because I basically had the Chiefs and the Raiders in that middle section coming into this year.
Didn't everybody, though, with the Raiders?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody missed that one.
No, I was in good, bad company. So, no, we were all wrong. Thank you, Beards, for coming in with it. Well, it wasn't just you. It makes me feel
you're welcome little, for make, defending you.
Yeah, thank you for defending me.
Now, other takes, however.
Oh, no. I mean, I've got some atrocious ones.
Yes. The Jets are going to be 0-38.
You know what my best prediction of all time was?
Go for it.
Back in 2014, I told some of my friends, Jaden Smith had just had a song come out. And everyone's like, lol, Jaden Smith is trying to rap. And I said in 2014 that within the next 2 years or so, he was going to become relevant in hip-hop. And 2 years later, he released a song called Fallen that is tremendous. And today, he just released his first full-length album and a new single that's absolutely lit. So we're going to be playing a bunch of Jaden Smith bump music for the future of the show. It's good. I promise it's good.
I feel like, though, the words Jaden Smith...
That's the thing.
And good.
That's the thing.
With any connotation, it's just wrong.
That's the thing, though. People are going to sleep on him because he's Jaden Smith.
But he's Jaden Smith.
If his name was Lil... Oh, man. Lil Glock horizontal. There we go. I got it. It's like a little Uzi Vert, but it's a different gun in a different direction. I guess it's not vertical. It'd just be Lil Uzi Hort. That feels problematic. But if he was gonna, if Jaden Smith was performing under the name Lil Glock Hort, then everyone would be like, oh, listen to this, man. Listen to this new Lil Glock.
It's still Jaden Smith, though.
Listen to...
Like, you can't disguise that fact.
Listen to this song by 22 Ruthless.
You could call him the reincarnation of Tupac, and he'd still be Jaden Smith.
It doesn't matter, though, man. The music is good. I know the hip-hop song. I don't think I can prove to you that a hip-hop song is good, because that's not really your speed, right?
It's not my favorite.
That's fine.
See, no, here's the thing, though. Like, Pursuit of Happiness, he was in.
Yeah.
And that was good.
Yeah.
There's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
This album is the one. Everything else after that. That's the problem of Jaden.
The singles that came out before was good. You can't impose movie rules on his music career.
It's Jaden Smith.
That's the thing. That's why, listen, I'm happy to defend Jaden Smith because I know it's good and I'm going to defend him against a bunch of haters. And then he's going to have, like, the Bieber thing happen, where everyone's like, oh, Justin Bieber. And then, like, 5 years later, everybody's bumping Justin Bieber. I'm going to get to say that I was here for the beginning of the Jaden Smith experience.
So, here we go. Here is the similarity. He had a cameo in Men in Black 2.
Yeah.
Those are his singles. Then he was in Pursuit of Happiness.
Right.
Then it was...
Masterpiece.
After Karate Kid.
Karate Kid was not great.
Nope.
He was in After Earth.
After Earth,
that
which
was
awful.
Panned, yeah.
And then, yeah, that's pretty much it.
I'm not willing to impose. I'll let you have that as a potential comparison, but I'm not willing to just go like, oh yeah, he's gonna have one great album. And I haven't listened to this new album in its entirety yet, because I've been waiting for the right like time to listen to it. You know what
I
mean?
Is there a right time?
Yeah. And I don't know what that is. I just need to not be doing anything. I didn't want to listen to it on a commute. Like, I listened to the new Neighborhood EP a couple of weeks ago while I was driving here. And it made me sad because I wanted to listen to it on, like, you know, big speakers with my, like, bedroom window open. You know, like, you got to get the right mood sometimes. That's why I brought this jacket today. I'm going to wear whenever it's colder out. This is my Jaden Smith attitude jacket. Look at this. Look at how, if you're on the Facebook stream, you can see this jacket. This jacket's amazing.
Look at the back of this. It looks very...
It's like tattoo style,
yeah.
Patchwork.
A little bit of like the Day of the Dead kind of look to it too, with
yeah,
some
a little
of
bit,
the stuff.
Yeah. Traditional tattoo art style. It is just some giant. It's wonderful. It's also bright green.
It is.
It's not like lime green. It's just
not
like,
doing anything for our Red Friday.
No, it's well. They got some like roses on it and stuff. I just noticed that the skulls have one of has a single gold tooth on it.
Of course, it does.
Pretty cool. Do you want to know something else I have in my bag before we get back to this Chiefs game?
Go for it. Oh, my gosh.
These are my gold teeth. They're very hard to talk in. But I got them this summer with some friends of mine that we just ordered them online because they're funny. And I've just had them in my backpack ever since. And I don't know why I haven't taken them out. But now I'm wearing grills. So I'd let you try them on, Beards, but they're custom fit to my teeth.
I'm very disappointed.
Not like they were made by, like, an orthodontist, but, like, it's like a mouthpiece where you melt the silicon and then put it in. It's really a complicated process. I'm going to take a selfie and tweet this out.
This is just awful radio.
I disagree. I think this is peak almost entirely sports. By the way, next Friday will be on Between the Lines.
Oh, no.
I'll be wearing these the whole show.
Oh, my gosh. That might be the end of just our existence.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
30 seconds in.
Hey, welcome to Between... Yeah, but I'm filling in for Kevin on Between the Lines on Sports Radio 810 a week from today, a Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving. And Beard is going to be there also running the whole operation. I want Lebo to walk by the window so I can smile at him like this, and then he will immediately find someone else to fill in for Kevin on Friday.
Should I text him? Or should I just go get him?
No, we just it has to happen naturally. I'll tweet it, and then someone will see it and reply and say, oh, no, what have you done? Also, somebody stole my monster out of the refrigerator, and I can't believe we're working with children.
Your mom has commented on the Facebook page, you sound like Daffy Duck.
Suffering succotash. I don't think that was Daffy. Was that Daffy Duck? Was Daffy Duck suffering succotash?
That was Sylvester, wasn't it?
I think you might be right. What did Daffy Duck ever say?
Well, let's go to Google.
No, let's go to a break.
Oh,
whenever we come back,
fine.
We'll talk. Oh, no, they came out.
Perfect time to go to a break.
Whenever we come back, we're going to talk to Seth Kaiser from Arrowhead Pride, talk about the Chiefs game, and I will I'll have my real teeth back in. I mean, my real teeth are still in. I'll take off the gold teeth. Rash neck.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Beards, what kind of cuddler are you? Are you a big spoon, little spoon? Are you an aggressive cuddler? Do you
aggressive cuddler?
Do you have disdain for human touch?
I don't know what an aggressive cuddler is.
You're looking at one right now, I'll tell you that.
It sounds like someone who needs an attorney, honestly. I don't think that's something you want to be.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Listen, I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
On ESPN Kansas City.
We're now joined by Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride, Chief of the North podcast, attorney at law. At some point, Seth, I do want to delve into your legal background so you can try to explain to us what on earth the NFL is doing to itself. But I don't want to start there, though. I need to start with something that Andy Reid said earlier today, and I haven't seen this get a whole lot of run. It's a really short audio clip here. But I thought this was really stunning and something that should be getting more attention in general. You'll hear here in about a 15-second little audio clip, Andy Reid just tells a bold-faced lie to the media today out at Arrowhead.
Again, we look forward to the challenge of playing the Giants. We know they're a good football team. We've had a chance to see their schemes, study their schemes. Guys have had a good week of practice and are getting ready to go up and play against a good team.
I cannot believe that he would just so cavalierly call the New York Giants a good football team and pretend that the rest of us aren't going to notice. Seth, your thoughts?
Well, it reminds me of any time, you know, the Chiefs are about to play the Patriots. You see, like, 14 quotes from Belichick talking about, you know, oh, God, yeah, their pass rusher is the best I've ever seen in 15 years. You know, it's just time after time. And every now and then you can tell it's a little more sincere.
Right.
I remember one year Belichick talking about Tom Bahali, and you could tell he was actually, like, drooling over him, like, oh, I love the way that guy plays. But most of the time, you know how it is. You're not going to go, what's Reed supposed to say? My God, those guys are terrible. Let me tell you something. If we lose, y'all should panic.
Yes.
Because that means we're in trouble. And so, you know, you don't want to give your opponent any cannon fodder. That's the wrong word, but all the same. You don't want to give them any kind of motivation.
Sure.
And you want to keep, you know, expectations down safely. That's how I do things with my wife. I keep expectations as low as possible. And then that way, when I barely achieve mediocrity, she's cool with it.
That's good. That's good life advice right there.
You're welcome. You're welcome. 10 years on the ninth. So, I mean, I'm doing something right.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Just 10 years now of consistent mediocrity. That's fantastic. You're the Cincinnati Bengals of husbandry.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping they'll put on my tombstone.
That's how we can at least add that to your Twitter bio or something. So you mentioned Tom Bahali there just in reference to something completely different. But we find out today that he's out this week. We talked to Matt Verderam yesterday, and he said something that I think actually makes a lot of sense, which is he said, if I was the Chiefs, I wouldn't play Tom Bahali for another snap until January. Because he came back last week, or, you know, 2 weeks, so last game, and right away he looked explosive. He looked like a guy who could actually do some damage to other teams, not just his knees. But now he's out again this week, and I I cannot be optimistic about a guy who had roughly like 10 months off from football, came back for 23 plays, and then now is out again even after a bye week.
Yeah, that's obviously less than ideal, and honestly, I think Matt's got a decent point there. I think the best you can hope for from Holly at this point is one 3 or 4 week stretch.
Yeah.
I really think that's it. And so you might as well wait until January where pass rush is everything.
Yep.
Because Holly, you know, you like you said, against Dallas, and that was against Smith, one of the best two or three left tackles in the game, he had a couple plays where he beat him. He forced a hold, he forced a hurry. You know, I mean, so you might as well, hey, this guy can help us. But it's almost like that, you know, it's like a one-off weapon. You know you're only going to get one shot, and so you might as well wait until it really counts. Now, we're far enough off from the playoffs right now still that maybe it doesn't hurt to try to get him in there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, the fact that he had to sit out even despite a bye week, that's rough news, you know? I mean, Father Time remains undefeated, and that just is what it is at this point.
Father Time was undefeated, but like Tom Brady has a 5-point lead with 2 minutes left, so we might have to at least, there's at least a moral victory coming for humanity in the form of Tom Brady.
Oh, yes, I'm sure that's what's happening there, is a moral victory.
Right.
That's what I think is the most likely thing when a guy inexplicably gets better in his late 30s.
He's been going to, like, Europe for surgeries for the last, like, 6 years, right? Doesn't he have, he has somebody in an alleyway just injecting things into his eyeballs?
You know, I really, when it comes to Tom Brady, I maybe I'm not cynical enough because I made the joke just now, but, you know, my wife is super into, like, gut health and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. and, like, you are what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to wonder, you remember Tony Gonzalez? He looked just as good the year he retired as he did 10 years earlier.
Right.
And he was, you know, famous. He was a vegan and all this stuff. I really do think there's something to be said for someone who has formulated their entire life and diet and everything around staying in tip-top shape for as long as possible.
Sure.
And I really do think that's just what he's done. If it weren't for Tony Gonzalez's example, I would say there's no way that guy's not juicing.
Right.
But I really think he just, I don't know what it is he's eating, but more people ought to eat it.
Yeah. It's a tough way of life, and it takes a rare set of genes, but some of us have to live that way. So it's both a gift and a curse from my own personal experience being an Adonis.
Sure. There's
also,
so few of us.
Also, Tom Brady has claimed that drinking lots of water keeps him from getting sunburned, so I do question his science, but, you know.
Yeah, the science is shaky at best, I would say. But clearly something he's doing is working.
Yes, that's true. All right, steroids. So.
Gesundheit.
Thank you.
You forgot to sneeze, though.
You're right. I didn't manage that perfectly. I just.
No, you'll execute it better next time.
Yeah, yes, we'll do it. We'll try that again next time. It seems like right now there are two schools of thought for the game on Sunday. You've got, again, Matt Verderam, who's saying that he just has this, like, really terrible feeling in his gut that the Chiefs are just going to somehow find a way to blow it on Sunday. And then you have my school of thought, which is I've now put on the record multiple times. If the Chiefs lose to the Giants on Sunday, I am going to call Elon Musk and ask him to build me a rocket ship that can launch me straight into the sun.
Well, that seems proportionate.
It does. I agree. Thank you for it's so refreshing to hear someone say that.
You know, I've known Matt for a long time. He actually started out at Arrowhead Pride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Arrowhead Pride is kind of the kingmaker, right?
I mean,
all writers about the Chiefs started there, it seems like.
Present company excluded?
Yeah, present company excluded. Well, of course, here I still sit at Arrowhead Pride, so what does that tell you?
You're the king. Anyway. You're the king of let's see, what can make you the king of? I'll figure it out. Keep going.
Yeah, king of the Pride heads,
sure.
If you were to ask Pete Sweeney. Anyway, so I've known Matt for a while, and, you know, I love Matt. Matt's an emotional dude, though. And so if I had a nickel for every time Matt had a terrible feeling about something, or that he had a great feeling about something. Now, Matt's a guy that he leans a little negative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he's more worried about what that would mean if they lost.
Right.
And now he's thought about it so much. That's the problem with a bye week. We've got too much time to think.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I actually tweeted like 3 days ago. It's like, why do I have this terrible feeling that the Chiefs are going to lose this game and it's going to be time to full-on panic? Because make no mistake, even though, yes, they'd still be at 6-4, no matter what happens this weekend, they'll be leading their division.
Mm-hmm.
But if they lose to the Giants, you can't tell me anyone's going to feel good about the rest of the season.
No. No, it would kind of feel over. Like, it would kind of feel like, oh, here's another example of this team just not quite being there. Still maybe the third best team in the AFC.
Well, some people feel that way already.
Right. Oh, yes, sure. I understand that. Now, I don't think that this is a terrible football team, but I think that they are back to kind of where I expected them in the preseason to be, which was below the Steelers and the Patriots and above everybody else, with the exception of the Raiders being worse than I thought they would be. I misjudged them. But everything else is pretty much according to plan. So but you're willing to at least say that everything that you know about the New York Giants makes you pretty confident in this game on Sunday, right?
Especially, my understanding is that Snacks Harrison is almost certain to miss the game.
Mm.
Who he's far and away one of their best players, an absolute monster against the run. I'd say maybe the best run defensive lineman in the game. That makes a big, big difference, because when the Chiefs have been at their best this year, it's been when Kareem Hunt is getting the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And with him out, hopefully Andy says, hey, you know what would make a lot of sense? And so, you know, here's hoping. I heard JPP might miss as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Odell is out for the year. Now, they still have some weapons on that offense. That Engram tight end of theirs looks like he's going to be a real good one.
Yeah, he does look good.
He already is a real good one.
Right.
And, you know, Shepard, I think, can play. Eli, you know, Eli's a wild card. He's one of those quarterbacks where every now and then he plays like, you know, like Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
More often, he does not, especially as of the last few years. But I just don't see it. I mean, the Chiefs are a much, much better football team than the New York Giants, and Andy Reid is a much, much better coach than McAdoo.
Yes.
And that's where it really comes down to it. The teams that have beaten the Chiefs this year, we had one freak game with the Raiders that was just everything, the forces of the universe combined to have them lose that game. Right.
The forces of Thursday Night Football, even. So even that is explainable, yeah.
Yeah, a Thursday night game on the road. I mean, road teams almost always struggle.
Yep.
And even then, they needed like four chances. It took a couple of terrible blown coverages. Just this freak thing. The other two games were games where well-coached teams executed really good plans.
Mm-hmm.
And now, does that make me afraid for the playoffs? Sure it does.
Yes.
Because that's what you're going to face in the playoffs. But other than that, the Chiefs just don't lose.
Right.
Except to very well-coached teams with well-executed game plans or in some freak happenstance. And I just don't think McAdoo's capable of executing the kind of plan. Everyone's like, oh, you know, Dallas and Pittsburgh have shown the secret sauce how to beat the Chiefs offense. And honestly, it's not like it's a secret sauce. Oh, wow, you mean if you disguise zone coverages with creative zone blitzes and make quarterbacks guess, it's going to make their lives harder?
Right.
Everyone knows that.
Right.
It's just difficult to do. And so I just don't see the Giants being able to do it.
Yeah, I agree with that 100% for 100 different reasons on both sides of the ball. They're a team that's lost a ton of talent and appears to be poorly coached. That's a team that you have to perform well against. So let's do some larger picture stuff then. The rest of the season for the Chiefs is filled with games sort of similar to this. Next week they get the Bills at home, starting now a rookie quarterback. You know, the Bills with a winning record, the Bills a decent team. But again, a team now with a rookie quarterback who will be one game into his career. At the Jets, another team that doesn't seem to be particularly well-coached or particularly talented, though they've had a surprising number of wins. Raiders and Chargers at home divisional games. Dolphins at home, another team that kind of fits that mold of a quarterback that hasn't been very good, a team that hasn't been very good in general. They're trading away pieces like Jay Ajayi. And you end in Denver. The rest of the season, you have to be expecting no more than a single loss, right?
I think that would be the expectation, yes. You throw in that loss because it's the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have, in my opinion, skewed expectations for the NFL. And more people are starting to see this, in that parity really is a very real thing.
Yes.
Even the very best teams sometimes struggle to beat teams that are considered bottom feeders. Football is a funny game like that. It just takes a few plays swinging one way or another. You know, it's not like basketball. It's not like the NBA where the better team is going to win 95% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
In football, it depends on how big the disparity is, but it might be more like 80% even in your most extreme scenarios. So you throw in that one loss. But, yeah, there's no reason the Chiefs should lose to any team left on their schedule. They really should be able to run the table. It just is going to depend on whether or not they fix some of the clear chinks in the armor that they've shown.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about one particular place that's interesting to me. You actually wrote about this, about the Chiefs' usage of Tyreek Hill. And this is something that we've been talking about here for a while. And I always feel so good about myself whenever I've been thinking about a thing and then you write a piece that explains the thing that I've been wondering about. Really good timing by you on that one. The Chiefs are, frankly, underutilizing Tyreek Hill at this point. You wrote out how he stands up. No, did you write this? I'm now wondering because I just questioned everything. You wrote this, right?
Yes,
thank
God. About Hill's efficiency on a per-target basis.
Yes.
And some of his skill sets, et cetera.
I just realized that also there was an article that somebody else wrote recently about quarterbacks that was very good. I wanted to make sure I got that straight so you didn't have to tell me that after I already asked you a question about an article you didn't write. So I'm glad that we were okay there. So you wrote about the fact that Tyreek Hill is with the best company in football whenever it comes to his efficiency per target, and
yep.
which includes a ton of factors. I love that as a stat because it includes a ton of factors that you
yep.
can use for measuring how good a receiver is. And
yep.
so one thing that I've been wondering is what is the cause of that? Because I think it either has to be an Alex Smith thing or an Andy Reid thing. I can't really come up with a logical other option. So I'm wondering, I guess, if it's either Andy Reid needs to ask Alex Smith to do that more often, or he has some reason that he's not asking Alex Smith to go to Tyreek Hill more often, or if it's Alex Smith in the moment being asked to do it and then deciding, you know what, that's not a shot I'm willing to take right now. Do either of those seem more likely than the other?
I think both of those actually seem somewhat likely, and I think it's a combination of both factors, which seems like a cop-out.
I think you're right,
really,
though.
I think you have to include both. So let's start at the top with Andy Reid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Andy's a wonderful offensive mind. Make no mistake about that. He is one of the best two or three offensive coaches in the game. And you can see that this year in how many teams are imitating what he's done with
yes.
this offense.
Yes, absolutely.
He is an absolute innovator. So everything I'm about to say does not take away from that because no one is literally perfect. Bill Belichick secretly isn't that good a drafter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's perfect. Nobody's good at literally everything. Here's one problem Andy Reid has, and I detailed this in the article. You can still find it on Arrowhead Pride. The number of targets that you see guys like Demetrius Harris and Ross Travis and Charcandrick West
yep.
and De'Anthony Thomas, and to a lesser extent, because these guys are a little more important parts of the offense, Albert Wilson and DeMarcus Robinson,
mm-hmm.
if you combine those six guys, and again, it's six guys, don't get me wrong, but they have twice as many targets as Tyreek Hill on a per-game basis. Now, again, that's six guys. But let me ask you something. If you're a team, and you and I have talked like this before in regards to like rushing Justin Houston,
mm-hmm.
if you're an opponent and you're saying, okay, they're going to either throw it to name one of those six guys or they're going to throw it to Tyreek Hill,
yep.
you're going to pick any one of those six guys. Doesn't matter which one.
Yep.
And the problem with Reed's offense is he designs first read plays for those guys. What I mean by that is they're plays that are designed to get one guy open, and they are designed with, say, like Harris as the first read in mind. And I use Harris as the example, not to pick on him too much, but because every Chiefs fan remembers plays where it's like, you know, third and five.
Yep.
And they run a design play for Harris.
Yes.
And that's the thing. Reed runs plays like that for Harris. He runs plays like that for Travis. He runs plays like that for everyone, it appears. And he does for Tyreek Hill as well, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But because Reed does that, that automatically takes, say, three or four targets per game away from Hill, at least.
Yep.
And now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you throw the ball, say, 28, 29 times a game, statistically, that's a very large amount. So right there out of the gate, that's the Andy Reed part. Then you get to the Alex Smith part. As best I can tell, the way the Chiefs' offense is run, at least in the passing game, is they've got the play calls, and unless it's a single It's unless it's a single read play, like a screen or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Alex has a variety of options. He gets to the line of scrimmage, he tries to read the coverage, and he bases his numbers, his checks, on that coverage, right? So he's like, okay, looks like I'm going to have favorable coverage over here, so Kelsey's going to be my number one read. And then you know, he goes from there. And so because of that, I don't think there's a lot of star favoritism. It's all dictated by the coverage of the opposing defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how Alex Smith plays. And he's good at it.
Yeah.
But what that results in when you combine that with Andy Reid's system is your stars not being quite the focal point that you wish they were.
Yeah. I think that that makes so much sense on both sides of it. There's only one other piece that I've been kind of, I don't want to say speculating for, but just sort of wondering about with this whole issue of not getting into Tyreek Hill as often as we might like the Chiefs to, is that I think this could also be shown in why the Chiefs went up to go get Patrick Mahomes and why the move to Mahomes next year still makes sense. Because I think that one thing Andy Reid is very good at is knowing what to ask of his players. I don't very often feel like I see guys, be it Alex Smith, Kareem Hunt, a receiver, even an offensive lineman. I don't think very often we see guys get asked to do more than they're capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think Reid is always good at managing that. And so I think that Andy Reid still knows, even after MVP-ish first 9 weeks of the season, or, you know, less so a little bit recently, but of an extremely good start to the season for Alex Smith. I think Andy Reid still knows that Smith's strength, to put it nicely, his strength is not in the deep balls to Tyreek Hill that we would see more of if he was in an offense with a more aggressive quarterback. Even in an offense with a guy like Jacoby Brissett, who is, I can say definitively, not been as good this year as Alex Smith has been. Please do not hear me wrong there. But a guy that is willing to uncork it a little more often and occasionally to throw a deep interception a little more often. That's sort of a place I've been wanting to take it, which is I think that Andy Reid is asking for exactly what he should be asking for from Alex Smith, which involves asking for things from a quarterback that still doesn't have Tyreek Hill play into his strengths, I suppose.
I could see that to an extent. The great thing about what we've seen from Tyreek Hill this year is we've had a much larger sample size of traditional wide receiver routes.
Yes.
I would say that Tyreek Hill has considerable strength across the board.
That is true. I agree
with
that.
So fortunately, he can do those things as well, mm-hmm. which I know you weren't knocking him.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I do think you're right. I think Andy asks his quarterbacks to do what's best for them because he wasn't asking Donovan McNabb to read entire defenses and basically run the offense from the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
He just wasn't.
Right.
He asked Alex to do that because Alex can do that. What can't Alex do? Well, we've seen it against the Cowboys and the Steelers, especially. When Alex doesn't know what to expect after the snap, he struggles. His footwork plummets. He gets jittery in the pocket. When things go kind of how he's expecting, and I'm not talking like, you know, because all quarterbacks are better when it goes how they expect.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not but what I am saying is when things go completely different from what he expected, the coverage is completely different, it really drops Alex's level of play, and he's not nearly as calm in the pocket. He's not nearly as good at going through 1, 2, 3, 4 and going through his reads because that's one area he's improved on a lot this year. Is going through his reads,
right.
Going and staying calm in the pocket. But we've seen a couple games where he got jittery with that. And I think that's when he's asked to make post-snap decisions. I don't think that's Alex's strength. I don't think that's how he processes. And that's where I think if you talk about the Patrick Mahomes comparison, it seems like that's where Mahomes flourishes.
Right.
And so, like, we've talked about from the beginning, and, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how this year susses out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the record. I think it's Mahomes' deal next year almost no matter what.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, what the hope is with Mahomes is that he can do 90% of what Alex can do in, like, you know, the pre-snap reads and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need to be as good at Alex. He probably won't be. Alex is exceptional at that.
Sure, of course.
But if he can be 90% of that but twice as good or three times better at the post-snap stuff,
mm-hmm.
you got an all-pro quarterback.
Right.
And that's, I think that's where we're seeing it now is Alex, you know, a guy like Hill and a guy like Kelce, they're going to get open more than everyone else. They just are. But you need a quarterback that maybe might get to that third or fourth read when things fall apart. And so I wish Andy Reid, because you're not going to change Alex Smith completely. I think it's a credit to him how well he's played this year and how he's changed. But, you know, you really should be dialing up more plays where it's like, Alex, hey, I want your first look to be Tyreek, no matter what, because he's that good.
Right.
So that's what I'd like to see more of, him and Kelce. I'd like to see it to where 60% of the passing offense were targets to Hill and Kelce.
Yes.
Because they really are all, I think they're both all pro-level players.
Yes, I agree 100%. I would love to see that. Seth Kizer from Arrowhead Pride. We don't even have time now to get to the wonderful legal battles that are coming in the NFL. But I'm guessing that we're going to have some more time over the next weeks, months, years to
yes.
dive into that a little bit. So, as always, thank you for coming on here today. You can read all of Seth's stuff at Arrowhead Pride. It's on Twitter, at RealMN Chiefs Fan. He just had a new episode of the Chief of the North podcast with Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star that I will be listening to this weekend. So I'm excited to get to hear that because it's two people with very good Chiefs insight and very confusing last names for large portions of the public.
That's what we were aiming for, really.
Yes, I hope you guys say each other's names often enough or say your own names like a Pokemon to where this doesn't become a problem for so many Chiefs fans.
Well, I always want to be someone's Charizard, so.
All right, Seth, next time you join us, that'll be the phrase that brings us into the segment. Looking forward to that also.
That sounds great. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Thank you. God, it's good. All right, that's Seth Kizer. This show's Charizard.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Oh, all these virgin nerds.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
What? What was that from?
I think it was because we had to have this discussion again the last time I played this. It was from the Pythagorean Theorem guy.
Okay. Just really catches me off guard. Well, that's great. Quickly here, we just have a little bit of time because we spent a lot of time with Seth. We're going to go back to more stuff Chiefs related in literally like 2 minutes. But
well, more than 2 minutes because we only have about a minute left in this segment.
Okay, great. Less than 2 minutes, that's what you mean.
No. I figured we were going to do more Chiefs stuff. After.
Yeah, we're going to get back to Chief stuff in like 2 minutes is what I said.
When we go to break then. Hit the wrong button.
You didn't want to hear from Bob Hamilton?
Not yet.
I was just going to say that the Union Broadcasting Refrigerator is the wild effing west. A couple days ago, I bought two Monster Energy drinks, and I drank one of them, and then I put the other one in the refrigerator. I was going to drink it yesterday, but I know that I didn't, because Beards went to Quick Trip, and he brought me a tea back, and I wasn't going to drink a tea and the Monster. That's insane. Too much sugar. Too sweet. Whatever. Way too much.
Whoa.
And I went in there to get it today, and it was not in there. Whatever was in there was some of these Arnold Palmer half-and-halves. These cans here, these Arizona brand cans that I put in the drawer. I shouldn't have to hide my drinks in the company refrigerator. Keep your damn hands off of my stuff. So I'm going to buy more. I'm going to buy more and I'm going to document it and make sure that I've got all these facts right. And then the next time I'm going to put like an electrocution thing on it, like a battery to kill them or shock them.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Do I come across as thoroughly hateable as I toot my own horn on this Royals thing?
Well, I'm tooting your horn.
What?
Damn it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
It's not so funny when you're the one on the other side of the liner button, is it?
It's not so funny.
I'm turning my mic off now.
On ESPN Kansas City.
I hope everybody else enjoys the little liners as much as we do.
Some of them more than others.
Oh, today's have been good, though. Like, there was one that you played a couple times. Eventually, I was like, I don't really like that one. I think that's the only... I think there's been one that you've been like, meh, that wasn't that funny.
I don't remember which one that is.
Me neither. If you play it again, I'll tell you.
Yeah, thanks.
Just good. Just good. You see, Jameis Winston was accused of allegedly groping a female Uber driver in March 2016.
I did hear that, yes.
I think eventually he's going to eat the L.
And the crab.
No, Beards, I already had a joke. Because he was always doing the word, eat this W, hum, 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 during the pregame speech against the Saints before they
lost.
That
is a good joke.
Yeah, it's going to eat an L. Although he's apparently refuted it, and then, you know, we'll figure it out. But we talked about this a little bit, like right when the Harvey Weinstein thing came out, and then Kevin Spacey, and now it's in politics. I mean, it already was in politics because Donald Trump's past stuff, but now it's in politics with, like, that still doesn't make sense. It's been in politics, but now it's in politics also, again, more, maybe. It's going to show up in sports. We're going to have, this is going to keep happening from former athletes, current athletes. It's going to be a large-scale conversation that we're going to have as it keeps popping up, as it should keep being addressed. But it's getting here, man. It's going to be everywhere. I don't know what kind of analysis that was, but
the short kind.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything else. I don't have anything else to add to the conversation currently, I suppose. Also, Blaine Gabbert and Tom Savage are going to play each other this week, and we're living in hell.
Oof.
Tell you what, though, you know what those two guys do? Tom Savage and Blaine Gabbert? They
suck.
No. Blaine Gabbert and Tom Savage each do something extremely well.
Suck?
Stop interrupting me with your worst joke. You know what? Okay, sidetrack. This is something that I would have assumed we'd be better at by now. It's the only thing, but it's the one thing.
Sucking?
I would have thought that you would have figured out when you have to just get out of my way so I can make my joke, and then you can make your joke.
But that's all the time. You always want people out of your way.
That's not always true. Sometimes I want, but if I have, I was setting it up.
Anytime you walk in the halls of the station, we all have to just run for different rooms so that we don't interrupt you or accidentally bump into you as you're walking.
That's true. I do ask for that. That is written into my contract.
Contract.
It's a funny joke. But if I start a joke and then you interrupt it, and then I start the joke again and you interrupt it again, I'm going to be mad. Like, just let me say this joke. It's not as funny anymore now because the moment's passed, but I'm going to reset the joke up again, and you will see why you interrupted it. Did you know that Blaine Gabbert and Tom Savage are playing each other this week?
No, I didn't.
It is happening, and it is amazing. They do not do much well, either of those guys, but they both do something unbelievably well.
What do they both do well, Josh?
They stand the hell out of the national anthem. See, was that so hard? And it was a decent joke also.
It was okay.
It was better than you yelling, sucks, three times.
Twice. Come on.
You brought it back. The callback was funnier than the second time. The second time was just annoying. Anyway. The Giants have allowed touchdowns to the tight end in their last 10 games, apparently. It's kind of amazing. Somebody earlier today was asking, they asked Travis Kelce about, like, well, what do you expect to do against a team that's, like, the worst against tight ends? And he was like, well, we expect to, you know, play a good team. They got some guys over there, some real talented guys. And I expect Travis Kelce to have 150 yards in this game. Not literally, but, like, kind of close. He has got to be a force. And like we talked about with Seth at the end of last hour, In general, Andy Reid and the Chiefs need to be better about getting the ball to their stars and exploiting the best matchups. The problem is whenever those conflict. Andy Reid is pretty good at doing that whenever both of those things are for the same person. So here it seems like the best matchup is going to be Travis Kelce with whoever he's going up against, and he's also one of the stars. Good news for the Chiefs. Now, whenever the best matchup is like, oh, this team is really bad against the slot receiver, Albert Wilson, you're the guy. You're the guy on the game plan. Well, then you start to go, oh, wait a second. Don't let the matchup overrule your better player. You've got to get your better player the ball. But it shouldn't be a problem here. And as we've said a few times recently, the Chiefs have to play really well these next 7 weeks and really make their argument for why they are to be considered among the class of the AFC. But again, I don't think they can actually do that against bad teams. They can only hurt their stock, really. I mean, if they win a bunch in a row and they say, oh, you know, the Chiefs, they started off really well and then they won 7 in a row going into the playoffs, that'll be something that people say a lot in the first round of the playoffs or the second round if they get the bye. People will say, oh, this is a hot team. You know, it's all about getting hot at the right time, and they're hot going into the playoffs, 7-0. Whoa-ho-ho! We will all know, though, that getting hot at the right time for the Chiefs meant playing the Giants and the Bills and Jets, Raiders, Chargers, Dolphins, Broncos. So, but if the Chiefs stumble at any of these places, and really, if they stumble at any of two of these places, if they lose to the Chargers at home or the Raiders at home or at the Broncos or even at the Jets, I won't be stunned. I would be disappointed. And if that's the only loss in the second half of the season here, it's fine, I guess. It's to be expected, at least, because it is the NFL. And that kind of bizarre thing does happen. And the Chiefs still have a bunch of good things on their resume. Beat the Patriots. The only team that this year that's beaten the Eagles. They're up there in the second class. And that they can't prove themselves better than that going forward. They can't prove themselves worse than that. If they fail to take advantage of their good matchups against these New York teams, 3 in a row, actually, I just realized. That's kind of funny. The Chiefs are playing the 3 New York teams in 3 consecutive weeks. But they're away, home, and away again. So they're going to, listen to this. Tell me this isn't the most fun thing you've ever learned. The Chiefs are going to be playing in the same stadium 2 out of 3 weeks. Because the Giants and Jets share a stadium. Don't you ever tell me this show isn't sportsy enough. Who else is giving you those kind of facts? I think it's MetLife Stadium, right?
Yes.
MetLife Stadium. Can I get some music while I look up MetLife Stadium? Yep. It's one of my favorite bits. The Chiefs have to win on Sunday. They're gonna. And they're probably gonna go 6-1 in their last 7 games. The large scale conversations will remain largely the same. They're doing it, by the way, I don't know if we mentioned this. I would have assumed we would have mentioned this in the first segment. I don't think we ever actually did. Tom Bahali, D. Ford, Alan Bailey, Albert Wilson, all out for this game. My biggest concern at this point, I think, is actually Alan Bailey. Because he does a lot of things, the defensive end spot, and the Chiefs have some depth, but the depth goes from being an advantage to a disadvantage as soon as all of the depth has to start. So that concerns me. The pass rush concerns me, not only in Bailey's spot, but also opposite Justin Houston. We don't have any news yet about Daddy Nicholas. I think still, and this is a pretty... This is just, it's just a guess. It's a pure guess. Because I think there's a chance that the Chiefs might go ahead and just call it a day on D. Ford, depending on the severity of his back injury. Obviously, depending on the severity of his back injury. But they're going to have to release or deactivate someone to bring Daddy Nicholas back. And I would assume that if he is any sort of available this week, they want to bring him back. Get him on the field. Don't rush him back, but if he is even at a place where he can get some rust knocked off, he can do it in a game against the Giants. He doesn't have to get to Eli Manning 3 times. He just has to be decent and rotate in with Zombo and let Zombo try to hold down the run game. And so, by the way, like I know this is going to come back and bite me whenever the Giants take a 14-0 lead on the Chiefs this weekend. But even the guys that you fear the most on this team don't strike fear into my heart. Like Orleans Darkwa, I might have taken an A out of it. He has the running back. Beards looked at me like I just blew a dog whistle, and he was a puppy.
That's wow. I got to look that name up. That's wow.
Yeah. Orleans Darkwa. I thought there might have been another A. It might have been Darkwa, but nope.
How do you spell that? Oh, found
like
it.
New Orleans.
Got it.
I mean, I guess it could be pronounced Orleans, but I feel like it's Orleans. Orleans, like New Orleans. Oh, his actual name
is... Yeah, I was just about to say I saw this too.
Go ahead and read it.
Orleans Opoku Darkwa?
Yeah. And he's had a pretty nice season this year. He's stepped in for a team that didn't have a really clear running back. I mean, this team had very little clear anything. But he oh, that's not what I was thinking. He played at Tulane, small school, was undrafted free agent.
Bob McAdoo might be clear.
What?
Bob McAdoo might be clear. You said they don't have a clear anything.
Just so, I meant offensive weapons.
I know. I turned the joke around.
But I get it. I was going in a. What did you? what's the Giants head coach's name?
McAdoo.
Yeah. What was his first name?
I called him Bob, didn't I?
You called him Bob McAdoo twice. You know what I did? You made me so unconfident.
You Googled it?
That I Googled it. And there was a basketball player named Bob McAdoo.
That's why.
No.
That's why I keep doing
you
that.
You don't. That doesn't count. That doesn't count at all. Bob McAdoo is 66 years old.
It also just sounds better than Ben McAdoo does.
Bob McAdoo sounds like a cartoon character in a kid's show. Ben McAdoo sounds like a washed-up NFL coach. So it's batting 500. The name association
okay.
thing is batting 500.
We'll go with that.
That is so good. Yeah, you said Bob McAdoo twice, and I was like, wait a second. Wait. So I typed Bob McAdoo, and then I typed NFL McAdoo. Like, wait a second. I think you might have missed that one. That is superb. Anyway, the weapons that they have, like Andrew Manning at quarterback, I don't think he's got much left in the tank. Star Shepherd, their main receiver, I don't feel that strongly about.
He's not a star.
Ollie Darkwa, I don't think has, you know, enough to really exploit the weaknesses of this team. Aaron Ingram, their tight end, I don't. Beard didn't realize what I was doing there.
No,
until
I know you.
Deep
you were
into
just
the
running
thing.
Past my joke.
I don't think Beard realized what I was doing until deep in. They really miss. What's a good... My internal monologue right now is going, what's a good name that sounds kind of like Odell, but isn't Odell? Odell's a pretty unique name. Drew Beckham Jr. Really miss him. Oh, Drew Beckham Jr. Bob Beckham Jr. is really a huge loss for this team. Also, was it Brad Marshall, the number two receiver on this team before he got hurt also? The guy who used to play for the Broncos and the Bears? That's funny, man. Seriously, folks, tip your waitresses, drive home safely.
They're totally missing Archie Manning.
I started off by calling him a different Manning, and you were not listening.
Nope, I wasn't.
I called him like Andrew Manning or something.
I wasn't paying attention.
That's what I was saying. I could tell you weren't paying attention.
Nope.
Did you call him Archie Manning?
Yes.
It's an actual person,
I know
though.
It is. It's the dad.
There are a couple. What I was going to say coming into this before I said that the Giants didn't have any really clear pieces of this team, especially coming into the season, and Orleans Darkwa stepped up and became the number one running back. made it a pretty easy decision for Bob McAdoo to restructure the depth chart. What I was going to say, though, is they have a decent running back. I think the Chiefs are going to be fine against decent running backs from here on out. I really do. I think Chiefs head coach Ben Sutton, or defensive coordinator, excuse me, that's my fault. Chiefs defensive coordinator Ben Sutton, I think he's got it figured out a little bit that, oh yeah, you can go back to a more base scheme whenever you need to, at least. And I think the Chiefs will handle that just fine. I'm not terrified of Sterling Shepard. I don't. He's a fine receiver. The Chiefs also have fine cornerbacks. Marcus Peters is going to thoroughly defeat anybody in front of him, unless it's a ball carrier. In which case, someone behind Marcus Peters will step up and then take over. And I don't understand how Kenneth Acker is still starting on this team, but I would even trust Terrence Mitchell over there. Evan Engram, the tight end, who I'm going to make sure I'm not just, I should have called him Aaron Engram. Evan Engram has been pretty productive in this offense, as Seth mentioned. And he's one of the constants now here. You can start him in your fantasy leagues. You can keep an eye out for him on the field. But he's the only thing that I think the Chiefs should have any problem with defensively. Now, we'll come back on Monday, and again, I'll go, man, can you believe the Giants put up 34 points in this defense? But the Chiefs do have a little bit of a tight end problem without Eric Berry. I mean, Berry was phenomenal against Rob Gronkowski back in week one. And then since then, it seemed like they have a personnel struggle. However, Bob Sutton does just sort of allow Ron Parker to man up with Evan Engram, I feel okay about it. If Eric Murray and Daniel Sorensen have to also be rotating through that, it makes me a little bit more nervous. Maybe the Chiefs will do some experimenting with Steven Nelson trying to cover the tight end. It's certainly a size mismatch. I'm guessing that Evan Engram has like 4 inches and like 50 pounds on Steven Nelson. But it's another option to consider as this defense tries to figure out how to deal with Engram. He's the only thing, though. Average running back, below average set of receivers, an up and down but disaster prone quarterback. You've got to feel good about where the Chiefs at. So if I had to put a score on it, because we try to do that every week, I mean, it should be seriously like 30-17. In fact, actually, and I wonder what the line is for this game. ESPN.com has a line at 10.5. I would take the Chiefs minus 10.5 points in this game. Even in New York. And frankly, like, and listen, big point spreads in the NFL, you've got backdoor covers and stuff that I'm sure, like, frequent gamblers know the terrors of. My inclination is to say Chiefs minus 10.5 feels like a really safe bet. I think the offense is going to really want to get out there and look strong. I think the defense is tired of being blamed for their poor performances. This feels like it should be a shellacking. So they'll lose on a last-second field goal by the Giants, and I will be rocket-shipped straight into the Giant star. You know, on a star scale, it's not actually giant. Into the sun, the core of our universe, into a giant ball of flames. By the way, did you know that our sun can never become a black hole?
Why?
It's not big enough.
That's comforting.
Well, no, it's not, because still eventually, and like I was reading about black holes and the sun explosions and everything earlier this week. Actually, like a couple days ago. And so the sun can, in about 4 billion years, I believe, is the estimation. So you and I are probably good.
Maybe.
It will expand, unless we get like Jerry Jones's plastic surgeon. I don't think we're going to be here in 4 billion years. The sun will expand. I think it said into a red dwarf, that where the sun would get so big that it would encapsulate the Earth entirely. So it would get larger than the orbit of the Earth around the sun. But I think, if I have all of this correct, whenever a star explodes and like then implodes back on itself, that's whenever the black hole is formed.
Sounds about right.
And it's obviously, it's so like, it's, there's so much matter so tightly packed that the gravitational pull of it is even pulling light into it. So thinking about it, the sun, our sun, doesn't have enough matter to be compounded so tightly that it would create a black hole. Also, you might have heard there, Beards turn off his microphone if you were listening to the fan buzzing behind him.
I had to yawn.
Yeah, he had the mic. He had the microphone on, and then he turned it off, as he just informed you, so he could yawn. Literally failing to entertain even one person right now.
No, it was interesting. I was just tired.
Of you. That would have been a funny... That would have been a funny little tack on there.
It would have.
It would have. The NFL and Jerry Jones are going to war. And I can't even pretend that it's not just... That it doesn't just absolutely tickle me.
Oh, did you see the new Jerry Jones news of the day?
Of the day? I think so.
The video that got released... Of him making a kind of racist joke like 4 years ago.
And he's what?
And he's now had to apologize for.
Yeah, when did this happen?
Check Deadspin. It's on there. That feels very much like an owner or an owner's confidant found that and leaked it out just to be like, hey, backroom warfare.
All right, we'll talk about it whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I just yawned into the microphone. Is that good? Is that good radio?
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
As promised, Jerry Jones. See, so I found there's a video on Deadspin. If you want to search it and see the video, the headline is, here's a video of a seemingly drunk office bleep Jerry Jones making a bad joke. And that all holds up. The headline accurately reports the content. So somebody got a video of Jerry Jones, apparently back in 2013.
That totally wasn't an owner or owner's aficionado.
I think you're wrong on that, actually, because this looks like somebody with their phone went to Jerry Jones, like, hey, Jerry Jones, can you say hi to my fiance for me?
Oh, no, I'm sure that's true, but I'm sure somebody may have found the video and got it out that way.
No, this is a personal video. They said that... The place that found the video said, we're told the fan recently shared it with his group of friends because he thought the current temperature of race in the NFL in the country made Jones' comments relevant. That's how it got out.
Sure it did.
Why? Okay, what you're saying makes no sense. I'm ignoring you. But so he's unbelievably red-faced. He's Charlie Carlin levels of red-faced. And Beards McFly levels of drunk. And Jerry Jones levels of racist, probably. And so he says, hey, Jennifer, congratulations on the wedding. Wedding, he says again. He says, now you know he's with a black girl tonight, right? Therefore, the camera pauses a beat, pans over to a black man standing next to the phone, wielding videographer. The three men laugh and then soon part ways. And so this little write-up of the Deadspin, on the Deadspin article is a good summation of why that's super gross. It says, clearly Jones made this comments is a joke, and it's a pretty gross and tired one about how the woman should be, I don't know, especially threatened or grossed out by the idea of her partner. Adding, I don't even know what this next word literally is, so I'm going to interpret it as, like, just racial. Adding some racial diversity to his joked about adultery. Still outside of being a bad, gross joke, I'm not sure if it's all that revealing of any deeper sentiments of Jones's that we could have already surmised before this. So, yeah, that's unsurprising. Also, this suggests another story for me to read, which includes the picture of a lady rubbing her face on Jerry Jones' crotch. Which is very appropriately referred to as this deeply upsetting picture, which is exactly what it is. I mean, there's a whole series of really atrocious, gross pictures of Jerry Jones with much younger and probably no less drunk women. all of that setting up our new conversation about how Jerry Jones is not only gross and weird, but also trying to end the NFL because he's mad at Roger Goodell. A headline from the New York Post today. I think this is all based on an Outside the Lines report that came out earlier today. But the headline on the New York Post is the better headline. Quote, Bob Kraft is a bleep compared to me. The shot that ignited NFL Civil War, which is by far the worst Avengers sequel. Avengers, the NFL Civil War. It's just a bunch of old, rich, white men sitting in a boardroom yelling at each other. Then at the end, our hero, Shad Khan, just... I don't know what he does. I got nothing. I think he's the only non-white owner. Not the only non-old owner, though. Clark Hunt's relatively young. And I think the Giants currently have the wife of the former owner or running operations. But it doesn't really matter. Don't at me with any of that, please. It's a boardroom of almost entirely old rich white men. Anyway, listen to this from the New York Post and tell me that you're not fascinated by this. Because I had a little bit of burnout on, and then this story today brought me a little more, brought a little more intrigue back into the story for me. The Ezekiel Elliott suspension is what sent a teetering NFL power share into a full-out civil war, ESPN.com reports in a lengthy piece on the state of the league. And Cowboys owner Jerry Jones fired the first shot in emphatic fashion. I'm going to come at you with everything I have, Jones told NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell after being alerted of Elliott's six-game suspension for alleged domestic violence against his ex-girlfriend. If you think Bob Kraft came after you hard, Bob Kraft is a blank compared to what I'm going to do. The latter was a reference to the Deflategate and the Patriots owner's anger at Goodell suspending Tom Brady for four games in the face of questionable assertions and dubious data. This is going to be nuts. So, the owners seem, by and large, to want to keep Roger Goodell around. Because even as issues befall the league, even as Roger Goodell mismanages parts of it, the NFL is still making unbelievable amounts of money. And Jerry Jones is mad because Ezekiel Elliott got suspended after apparently Goodell said was not going to happen. The league says those promises were never made. You can believe who you would like with it. Here's a thing that a senior league executive told ESPN. Quote, Jerry's message to Roger was, I run this league. You better get with it. This is about power and control, not the contract. That's all white noise. A perfect use of that phrase. Goodell still has owner support led by the Falcons' Arthur Blank, who heads up the compensation committee, and an extension that will take him through 2021. That seems inevitable. Through the 2021, collective bargaining talks. This is not how we do things in the NFL, Blank recently told Jones as tensions worsened and leaked out through the media. The leaks haven't stopped, and the drama appears to have only just begun. I want to talk to Seth Kizer about this earlier. We ran out of time. But he had a tweet that I thought was really interesting, and I don't know if this is any sort of enforceable. I'm guessing that this won't come to any sort of fruition, but I liked his sentiment here. He said, reading all of the drama, Reed, Goodell, Jones, and the owners, I can't help but think that the NFL could do better with some fresh blood, both among league executives and ownership. And I think that's true, man. If you got ostensibly younger owners and a younger commissioner, but at the very least, new ones brought in, they could do some sort of wholesale league fixing. The next CBA could be kind of built from the ground up. Owners could have a new understanding of how this whole process works. things could change. Nothing will change, though. Nothing substantive will change with the same commissioner, all of the same owners, the same player reps. Things might move in nudges, this way, that way, in favor of the players, in favor of the owners, in favor of Goodell, in favor of Jerry Jones. But short of hitting some sort of reset button, it's just not going to happen. So we're going to get caught in this. And now, I think I used this phrase earlier this week. Now, either Roger Goodell or Jerry Jones is ultimately going to have to take an L. And these guys do not want to admit defeat ever. I think it's one reason that I'm sure we see more patience with certain organizations than others, because owners don't even want to admit that they made the wrong hires. Much less, though, in a state like this, where Roger Goodell and Jerry Jones have made their stances very clear. Goodell has a better chance of sort of saving face by the end of this than Jones does, because Jerry Jones has declared war on the commissioner, and therefore, with all of the owners that want to support Roger Goodell, anything less than and this might change the perception of this might change as things unfold. But I think we can say this definitively now. And so do not let anyone else sell you anything different. The only way that Jerry Jones wins this is with the firing, or at least the lack of an extension, for Roger Goodell. Jerry Jones will be taking a loss in one form or another if he suffers anything less than Roger Goodell being run out of the league. And I don't think he's going to get run out of the league. I don't know if he's going to get $49.5 million salary every year with a private jet for life and health care for himself and for his family for life, whenever NFL players don't get health care for life after using their bodies to bring you your money. Something that I truly cannot believe. I think they have NFL-funded health care for 3 years after retirement, I believe is the number. Which is absolutely bonkers. And he should not get more money for doing a worse job. But I understand also why you want to keep Roger Goodell around. I think you can also say unequivocally that money would be better spent to get your own players lifetime health care after using up their bodies for you, for your company to thrive. But the other way this can go is Jerry Jones throws a fit and pretends that he somehow won the battle. And I think that would have to be something like him saying, you know what, you can't fire me, I'm selling the team. And I can't see Jerry Jones selling the team, and for any reason other than him becoming the next commissioner, which especially now seems impossible. I cannot imagine the rest of this NFL ownership group saying, you know what, yeah, you're right, Jerry, you should be the one who takes the spot over. I do not think by any means that Roger Goodell is doing an impossible job or doing a particularly good job even at a job that I think plenty of people could do. I think there are plenty of people that could manage those egos and be a glorified PR head and put out some disciplinary rulings and then get booed at the draft. Lots of people could do that for less money. Lots of people could do it better than Roger Goodell has done it. I believe all of that. But at this point, it's about the ground that you're trying to hold. And Jerry Jones isn't going to budge off of his stance now. And I don't think that the NFL, the rest of these owners, these 31 other owners, I don't think they have any interest in appearing to fold to the wills of the will of Jerry Jones in what could only be viewed as a dog rolling over so you can rub its belly. And at that point, Jerry Jones becomes the de facto ruler of the owners, and none of those people like being told what to do. It's why we had all of the stuff after Jerry Jones, or after, good grief, after Donald Trump said everybody should be forced to stay in SOBs. We didn't get a response to that because every owner is very passionate about their players making justified social stances. No, we got the unity stuff because NFL owners don't like being told what to do by the president, much less another one of their owners, and much less by one of their employees, and Roger Goodell. But someone is going to be embarrassed by this. Either Jerry Jones is going to be embarrassed as he fails to get what he wants, or Roger Goodell is going to be embarrassed by being run out of the league. But I think it's almost certainly going to go in one of those two places. I don't know how it can be anything else other than the appearance of them making amends, which I just don't think can be done. I don't think they want it to be done. Also, I liked the Skycam last night. Oh, that was fun. Did you watch the game at all last night? Because you were here. Did you occasionally glance up and see the Madden view?
Well, in between commercial breaks from Celtics Warriors, I occasionally flipped back just to kind of check on it and see what it looks like.
I was cool with that. Somebody posted later. Actually,
it was okay what I saw.
Somebody posted today the view that would actually show all 22 players because they were missing the outside receivers, which kind of stinks. But some people were saying, oh, it's all about the offensive lineman. It puts the offensive lineman in the middle of the screen. You can't see a bunch of stuff on the edges. And then someone posted that with a screenshot of the standard camera view. You've got the offensive and defensive lines right in the middle. You cannot see the receivers that have run out of the picture. So I actually think that the Skycam view, not only does it give you a more full picture, it gives you the quarterback's perspective a little bit, which it would make a lot of us sort of armchair analysts, I think, appreciate quarterbacks a little bit more. Also, though, one other thing that I thought was fair is I was not watching it as a Titans or a Steelers fan, just watching it as a football fan. I don't know if I would want to see it like that for my team. I don't know if I would want to watch Chiefs games that way because it's different.
Were they doing it in the end zone as much?
No, they were doing it differently.
A couple times I flipped over and I just saw the normal broadcast view.
I think first downs in the red zone, they went back to standard shots. I believe that was the case. But it was definitely, they're varying it up for sure. But I liked it. I'm into it. I got a couple more questions on Twitter yesterday after the show that I wanted to touch on real quick. Ryan Engle tweeted in the three. Excuse me. He asked for a midseason Brett Veach evaluation. It's really hard to do that. The moves that he made were Reggie Ragland and Cam Irving. Cam Irving was bad. But he is apparently looking pretty good as sort of the sixth offensive lineman whenever he comes in as a tight end that will never catch a pass. Incomplete grade there. Reggie Ragland seems like a good move. He's going to be a continually larger part of this team going forward. That's all I got right now. I don't think you can judge Brett Veach very much because he hasn't really had a chance to do much more than those moves. He also asked, who's more important, Matt Nagy or Brad Childress? Oh, I just bearded to that. Matt Nagy or Brad Childress? I think Nagy's going to be a head coach somewhere else next year.
Bob Childress?
What?
Bob Childress?
Bob Childress. I think Nagy's probably going to be a head coach next year because...
Mark Nagy?
Yeah, our famous Chiefs offensive coordinator.
Mark?
Mitt Nagy. I think he's probably going to end up being a head coach somewhere next year because the Doug Peterson thing is working out and teams are going to just take Andy Reid's offensive coordinators. I think Andy Reid is most
important. Alan Reid?
Famous Alan Reid, Chiefs head coach. I think he's the most important. I would be interested. The only question there that really matters, I think, is will Brad Childress move into the offensive coordinator role? I think the answer, though, to your question is Nagy because this offseason, he took on a bigger role, and Childress took on a smaller role. I think that's the answer to your question. But I think the offense will be fine without either of them. And then Ryan also asked, over-under on 1 month until someone is seriously injured at the axe-throwing bar. To which I responded, what?
This is news.
There is an axe-throwing club that has opened up in the West Bottoms.
I feel like that's a bad idea.
It's like darts, but with axes.
I feel like that's a really bad idea.
It says it's like darts, but with axes.
Yeah.
The picture of it makes me feel a little bit better. It says, Blade and Timber, a new axe-throwing club, is now open in the West Bottoms. Players enter a lane, grab an axe, lift it over their head, and throw it at the target. Just like in darts, they aim for the bullseye. Teams are now forming, and instructors are on hand to improve performances.
This isn't a bar?
This is what I'm trying to figure out now.
Seems like an awful idea. Hey, guys, let's give people alcohol and then axes that they throw.
I'm looking for the alcohol thing. I haven't...
It's a bar, right?
It's no, okay, so I haven't actually seen it referred to as a bar here. So I think we're good on that. I don't think they're also serving alcohol. That's the good news. The bad news is it's in the West Bottoms, which means you don't have to have alcohol sold in that establishment for it for inebriated people to be brought in. So, yes, you know, axes and alcohol seem like a horrible mix.
Also, throwing axes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, good point.
Like, chainsaw juggling is the only thing that's worse.
Not even slavery?
Debatable.
Not debatable. Not debatable, but such a good callback if you listen to every moment of the show. If you don't listen to every moment of the show from the last, like, month, then right now you are so confused. And let me just tell you, welcome.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
In case you somehow missed that over on Facebook Live, you can fast forward later on to about the hour in mark. You can watch me eat a banana.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Good week of shows, I think. I think we did okay. KU having an actual game was really nice. That really helped. Chiefs are playing again. It's good news.
Especially since that's all the shows are voted to 90% of the time, it feels like.
The Chiefs, you mean?
Yeah.
I think it's not even close to 90% of the time.
95, I'm sorry.
I feel like that's exaggerating. I think it's exaggerated by your disdain for everything except for the NBA and, I guess, jokes sometimes, maybe.
Speaking of which, how about those Celtics that somehow shocked me and won 14 straight against the Warriors?
Are you done?
Sure.
Listen, I don't want to run you off of your NBA point for anything less than something very important that we haven't gotten yet to today.
Can I say one more NBA thing very quickly?
Sure, go ahead.
I miss Gordon Hayward now because there were times last night where the Celtics just had those little streaks where they couldn't score anything. I was just like, man, it'd be really nice to have a second guy. And they still somehow won that game. Okay, I'm done. That wasn't too bad, was it?
It wasn't great. I didn't enjoy it.
Cool.
I also, just for the first time, learned what it means to not listen to this show. Because there's like 10 seconds, like Gordon Hayward and Celtics, and I was just watching the six. They're talking about Jerry Jones's video comment. Sorry, I just assumed that you were going to go ahead and say something else about how the Suns gave up 90 in the first half yesterday.
No. I'll let you do that.
All right, so what we're going to do now is I saw on Facebook a link to something called IDRLabs.com. And if you go to IDRLabs.com/villain/test.php, you can go through a 45-question test that will ask you some questions made by professionals. This is not some BuzzFeed thing. That will...
They don't ask you what your favorite movie is.
No, it'll judge. It won't ask your sign. No.
What character do you most like in movies?
No. What it will do, though, is it will rate your levels of extroverted versus introvertedness, dreaming versus realism, warm-heartedness versus cool-headedness, focus versus flexibility, and a sense of brooding versus a carefree attitude. It will judge all of those things. And then juxtapose them to the most similar murderous villain
in history.
This is not, you're not going to get the Joker. You're not going to get Scarface. You're going to get, like, Stalin. So
Genghis
Beards,
Khan.
Beard, right. Beards and I both took this test today. And I would like to know your ratios of each category. So it gives you a little chart. And I saved my chart. I will tweet my chart out. I didn't want to do it earlier because I didn't want Beards to see it until now. I don't know what Beards got. Beards does not know what I have. But it gives you a chart for each of those five categories. And so roughly, Beards, are you more extroverted or introverted?
I'm much more on the introverted side.
How much more?
It's
ballpark. It puts it in quarters. So top quarters, you know, mid-level, bottom quarter.
I'm in the middle part of the quarter that's closest to introverted.
So extremely so.
Yes.
We'll each do our own sections, and then we will reveal our villains.
Okay.
I am literally as extroverted as humanly possible.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's literally in the very top.
Yep.
Top left corner.
Dreamer, I got pretty much smack dab in the middle, but more towards the realist side.
As did I. I'm in the middle of that third quadrant.
Well, I'm just like halfway, period.
You're right in the middle completely.
Almost. It's okay. More on the realist side than it is dreamer side, but Fine. It's pretty much halfway in the middle.
Fine. Warm-hearted versus cool-headedness?
Halfway again, but it's more towards warm-hearted.
Okay, I'm a little bit up there also, yeah, which is wrong, but that's okay. Quizzes have problems.
More so on focus and flexible, but it's still at that halfway point again.
I am almost as far to the flexible side as humanly possible. A little bit of space, but very close to it.
And then
you can guess because my focus levels aren't my biggest strength, and I am very flexible, not only mentally, but also physically. I'm wearing my stretchy jeans again today.
And then I am somehow more brooding than I am carefree, but that, it's, again, more in the middle.
That makes sense.
That's a little
You're
weird.
Pretty neutral, though.
Yes.
So, drum roll, please. Which historical villain are you most like?
Heinrich Himmler.
I don't know who that is. Explain history, man.
Nazi Germany. Minister of the Interior in Nazi Germany.
Read the personality match.
Like Heinrich Himmler, you are loyal, orderly, and strive to please your friends and superiors. Your attention to detail and responsibility in which you appropriately work, which you approach your work, are assessed in any endeavor. Assets in any endeavor. However, every once in a while, you would do well to zoom out and evaluate the big picture.
That feels right. I think you crushed that.
I think this is stereotyping since my last name is Wilhelm.
I am Benito Mussolini.
Okay.
Save that for posterity. Listen, the personality match is right on point. Like Mussolini, you are high in energy, sociable, and spontaneous. When you are inspired to throw yourself into something, your enthusiasm is contagious, and others enjoy coming along with you for the ride. However, if you do not take care to think things through, you may find yourself trapped by consequences that could have easily been foreseen and avoided by more cautious people.
We need more time on this because there's like a words of warning section. And
yeah,
we needed to have more time for this.
I think we did okay. I think we've explained pretty well. You are who again?
Heinrich Himmler.
And I am Mussolini. There we go.
Oof.
So for Heinrich Himmler, I am Benito Mussolini.
Nice impression. Spot on.
I was just sort of signing off for the week. We'll be back on Monday to talk about that Chiefs game. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.